Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as YouTube and iTunes and podcast.com and blueberry.com and Stitcher Radio, and of course our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. Since I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, you see the connection there? Okay. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving, and we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing. That's right, it's called caregiver burnout. You know what I'm talking about. But we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Linda Bice. That's right, Adrian Gruberg is missing. She cut her hand opening up a jar of pickles and had to be rushed to the hospital because it wouldn't stop bleeding. Poor Adrian. But she may join us later, you never know. But if I know the emergency room in Manhattan, I would say don't count on it. Well, today we will be interviewing live Dr. Barry J. Jacobs. And Barry is a clinical psychologist, family therapist, and the director of behavioral sciences for the Crozer Keystone Family Medical Residency Program in Springfield, Pennsylvania. Try saying that fast three times.
I know, right?
Now, he's also the co-author of AARP Meditations for Caregivers, Practical, Emotional, and Spiritual Support for You and Your Family, and the author of The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers, Looking After Yourself and Your Family While Helping an Aging Parent. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show on self-care for the caregivers. So if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone video, I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind, mostly family caregivers, but not only family caregivers. But the one thing we know about caregivers in general is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial, and oh yeah, they have this very bad habit. They're prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Well, you know, like the airlines always tell us, in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. Why do they tell us this? I mean, it sounds like the most selfish thing you could tell a parent, right? Well, you see, they actually know that if you don't do that, that, you know, you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones, you will most likely black out, and then you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing, just like we needed another thing. This one's called the grief process. Ouch. And unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. Can't go around it, over it, under it. No shortcuts. Got to go through it. Sorry. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're stuck. And hey, I want to take this time and thank my last week's guest, Jean Kirkley, caregiver and founder of the Boomers Are Heroes support group. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all of our interviews on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S and then caregiver without an S.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free called One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. My wife's amazing story of surviving a devastating stroke that robbed her of her speech and paralyzed her right side. I mean, she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So it's a great deal. All right, enough of that. Dr. Jacobs, welcome to the show and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I really appreciate it. Are you unmuted?
Thank you so much. I am unmuted. Can you hear me, Dave?
I can hear you. Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who the heck is Dr. Barry Jacobs?
So I am, as you mentioned, I'm a psychologist, and I have worked my entire career in medical settings. The last 22 years, I've been working in a large family medicine office outside of Philadelphia, where I also train family doctors, social workers, and psychologists in being nice, humane people, and as well as helping family caregivers. I also have my own family caregiving experiences, as many clinicians do. I grew up in a family in which my father had brain cancer while I was a teenager.
Oh.
And I saw my mother and grandmother, my father's mother, basically fight over everything that they could possibly fight about during my father's illness. So much so that when my father died, they then did not speak together for 17 years until the day of my wedding.
Wow.
So that certainly added to the grief process that I went through with my father's death.
I bet.
In more recent years, since 2010, I had for some years I cared for my stepfather with Alzheimer's disease. He has since passed, and I'm now continuing to care with my mother for my mother with vascular dementia, who is now in a nursing home. You know, I've had a lot of personal experience, which helps inform my professional experience and my writing.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you're one of us. You've gone through the club, so to speak, the initiation. You know, caregiving is something that's better felt than telt. And I always get a kick out of these psychologists or doctors or PhDs. And, you know, they decided for whatever reason to speak with caregivers and they don't know anything about caregiving. So we appreciate your experience. Now, you've written a couple of books, huh?
I have. So I wrote a book 10 years ago that was, as you mentioned, called the Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers. It was published by Guilford Press. And that is a book that talks about what I consider to be the seven important tasks that all family caregivers need to tackle in order to be as good a caregiver as they possibly can be.
Wow.
And so that's a how-to book. And more recently, my wife, Julia Mayer, who's also a psychologist, she and I co-wrote a book is called AARP Meditations for Caregivers, and that just came out in July, published by DiCapo Publications. And that is more of an inspirational book that has 150 short stories about caregivers, inspirational stories about people overcoming adversity, trying to find the positive rewards of caregiving.
Wow. Now, how is it that you're connected with the AARP name? Tell us about that.
Well, I've been around writing and speaking on family caregiving for 25 years, and about 4 years ago, AARP reached out to me and asked me to join their caregiving advisory panel, and I did. And as part of that, I started writing a monthly column for the AARP website on family caregiving. And about a year and a half ago, someone from AARP's book division asked me to write a book on meditations for caregivers, and so then I was able to bring my wife into that to that project, and it's been a great effort working with AARP.
Wow! So they specifically thought of you, they called you, they told you what to write, a book on meditations for caregivers.
That's correct. I mean,
awesome.
They wanted to do a book that was going to be inspirational in nature to help caregivers do the hard work that they have to do.
Yes, I'm looking at Linda on the screen here. Forgive me, Linda, I forgot to introduce you officially. This is Linda Bice. Why don't you take like 30 seconds and just tell us who you are so that we know.
I am Linda Bice, as you said. I'm a caregiver. My husband went into cardiac arrest when he was 49, 10 years ago this past Christmas. And he was dead for an hour and 20 minutes. So I have been caring for him. He has severe brain damage and is bedridden. And a year and 2 months after that, our only son was paralyzed from the waist down due to a rare virus called acute transverse myelitis. And so, yes, I know all about caregiving. But the wonderful news is our son is now walking, even though he can't feel his leg. He is a walking miracle. But he helps me take care of his dad.
Linda, you are a saint. Barry, may I call you Barry or Dr. Jacobs? What do you prefer?
Barry's fine.
Barry's fine. Thank you. Let me begin by going into your book on meditations. Now, there's so many different definitions of the word meditation. from religious to metaphysical to mental. I mean, how are you defining meditation? I mean, it's a scary word to some people, isn't it?
Sure. So, meditation, I think most people think of it in two senses. Mm-hmm. So one is the actual technique of sitting and breathing deeply and counting your breaths and getting into a deep trance-like state in order to achieve a greater state of relaxation, or what's called non-reactive awareness, helping people be present as possible without reacting emotionally strongly to the things that are going on with them. And so mm-hmm. meditation, as you know, has become much more popular in Western culture in the last decade and yeah. is used in psychology to help many people with depression and anxiety and many different problems. So our book, Meditations for Caregivers, has some of that, but mostly the book is using the term meditations in the second sense of the word, and that is as a kind of reflection, people thinking about and reflecting upon what they have been going through in order to derive as much meaning from those experiences as possible, to see what lessons they've learned and how they can apply those lessons in other parts of their lives.
That's a great way of looking at it. Can you maybe share the top three techniques that's in your book upon the types of meditations or how you do them? Or like you just mentioned, we're not just meditating. We're trying to learn what we learned through the meditation, maybe from the previous day or the previous week.
So the book is a lot about self-reflection, about helping people increase their awareness of what they're thinking and feeling and what their circumstances are, and to be able to stand back from the everyday to a degree, to be more present, but in another sense, to be able to think of the larger virtues that are driving the work that they're doing. For people to think about the religious, spiritual, and personal reasons why they got into caregiving, why they're making the choice to provide care to someone that they love. Because I strongly believe that this is a choice, and it's a choice that's often has very important personal reasons behind it that drive people on through very difficult circumstances. When people can reflect on those choices, they feel more gratification and less burden with the work that they're doing.
Yeah. You know, through my page, Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver on Facebook, we get so many stories. And the first thing that pops into my mind, what would you say to one of my viewers who says, choice? I had no choice in this. I was drafted into this. You know, nobody else in my family wants to do it. I was the only one who got stuck with it. And here I am watching my loved one for 3 years. I had to give up my job. My girlfriend dumped me. I've gained 100 pounds. I mean, what do you say to that person?
Well, I would say that it sounds like you're in a very difficult circumstance, first of all, and that you're doing yeoman's work. But what I also say to them is that I've been around a long time. I've actually worked with caregivers who have abandoned the person that they're caring for. I mean, literally, kind of packed their bags and left one day. And if you're not going to do that, if you're not going to pack and leave, if you're not going to stop caring for the person, then it becomes a question of, well, how do you do this and do it as well as you can and do it with as much support as possible and to derive as much benefit from it for yourself and for the person you're caring for. So I do believe it's a choice. I mean, it's a very difficult choice, but it's a choice that people make. In most of the conversations I have with caregivers, many of them, even those who will say that they feel trapped in caregiving, many of them will also say that on a certain level they think that they're doing the right thing. And many of those folks said that if given the choice to do this again, they would still choose to be a caregiver because it is what they're doing is that important to them.
Yeah, I hear that a lot as well. Yes, you're right. It may not have been their first choice to do this. I mean, they may have been bamboozled or suckered into it, but definitely on day two, they do have a choice. You know, they can either, like you said, just leave. And I know people, I mean, my wife had a stroke 20 years ago and I'm still here. And we met people in our support groups who likewise are there. And yet we met way too many people who said, my husband served me divorce papers while I was still in the hospital, you know, trying to recover, basically saying I didn't sign up for this and I'll see ya. So, I mean, some people take their vows very seriously, especially we're talking about spousal support, of course. But, yeah, you're absolutely right.
I mean, thank God that people take their vows seriously. I mean, we need people to take their vows seriously. And I mean, really, it's not just wedding vows, but it's also the kinds of commitments we make towards one another as loving family members. I mean, that's really what I mean, caregiving is really about the loving bonds that we have and what we're willing to sacrifice to help somebody. And sometimes it's to give back to that person. Sometimes it's because we have it's morally feels like the right thing for us to do. Sometimes we do it because we want to model for our own children what it means to take care of their grandparents. And so we're teaching our children what it means to be a good family member. I mean, there's lots of important reasons that people do this work, and those are the reasons that I want to highlight and have foremost in people's minds to get them through the very tough days that most all caregivers have.
Okay, we're going to take a break. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where, after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere. But if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
And we're back with Dr. Barry Jacobs and Linda Bice. So these are great book titles, Barry. What inspired you? How much latitude did AARP give you on the subject or the title of the book or what?
AARP gave us a lot of latitude in regards to the subject matter. I mean, we chose 28 themes we thought it some emotional themes, some kind of moral themes that we thought what we ought to focus on in describing specific stories of caregivers going through certain life events. We didn't have very much latitude in terms of the title. That's the sort of thing that people in marketing choose. But it was, you know, that we had a lot of a large free hand in shaping the book itself.
Yeah. Now you speak to many groups and places, right? Caregivers, and who else do you speak to? I understand you spoke like 400 times.
So I've done about 400 talks in the past 10 years, and they are to groups of caregivers. I also do a lot of speaking to professionals. So I speak to both physical health professionals, like physicians and nurses, because I work as a medical educator, and I basically teach them about what are the needs of caregivers and how they can best help caregivers during a medical visit, for instance. And then I also speak with mental health and social service providers. I give talks about providing counseling for caregivers and how to best to partner with caregivers in helping patients.
So basically, when you're talking to doctors, for example, or nurses, you're giving them advice on how to take care of or treat the caregiver, which may not even be their patient. The loved one might be the patient. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. So, okay. I mean, for instance, I work in a large family medicine practice. So we have a lot of older patients here, you know, people who may have diabetes or arthritis or even dementia, and they are they're cared for by either a spouse or by an adult child who accompanies them to the medical appointment. And then it becomes a question of how does the doctor not just focus on the patient but also engage the caregiver, because frankly the caregiver is going to be the eyes and ears for that doctor in the home and be able to help the patient eat right, sleep right, take the medicines correctly. And so the doctor has to keep the caregiver going as well.
Yeah. Linda, is your audio working? I'm hearing something on your end.
Recording is on.
Why don't you mute yourself? Mute yourself. Okay. Oh, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you earlier, what I'll ask you first, doctor, what are the most common caregiver questions from caregivers? And then I'd love to know what kind of concerns you're getting from, you know, administrators and other classes of people you talk to when you're out and about.
So, caregivers initially want to know about the specific disease that their loved one has. So, you know, some of it's basic informational needs. They want a very common concern is how do they engage other people in helping them? If they're an adult child, how do they get their siblings to help? If they're a spouse, how do they get their children to help or other family members to pitch in so that they don't feel so alone? And then a very common source of concerns is how do they get the person who they're caring for to be more cooperative? Because that person can be a little bit ornery sometimes and give the caregiver a hard time.
Well, you know, maybe it's a coincidence, but all three of those questions are the same questions that my viewers are asking me every single time. And I would really appreciate it if you can finally give us an answer to those three questions, because those are pretty tough questions to answer.
They're very tough questions to answer, and there's no one answer, no three answers that are going to meet everybody's needs. But
what about the siblings? How do we get siblings who, you know, just think that they have no responsibility, and the one sibling who's doing it all is just killing themselves?
So I give you how I advise siblings on this, and I often get together with sibling groups to talk about this. I basically say to the caregiver, the primary caregiver, to reach out to your siblings with very specific and direct asks. Ask them to do something very small, like, can you take dad to the physical therapy appointment on Friday at 3 o'clock? Or can you pick up, some groceries for us on Saturday? So when the asks are small, doable, and specific, the siblings are more likely to come through. So that's kind of one strategy. The other strategy is, especially when a sibling might be resistant to taking care of an aging parent with whom they may have not have had a good relationship in the past, I would recommend that the primary caregivers stay to that sibling This is not about what you do for mom or dad. I'm asking you for, because this is what you do for me. And mom and dad are not going to be around forever, but you and I are going to continue to have a relationship, hopefully, forever. And what goes on between you and I now during these times is going to affect our relationship going forward. I mean, to put it quite just that bluntly, because that, in fact, is the truth. The truth is that everybody remembers who is there in mom's hour of need and who is there in the need of the caregiver. And when caregivers feel abandoned by family members, that resentment will just color that relationship going forward for decades. And so I would rather everybody understand that the stakes are high here, and that if they don't come through, then they're going to be held accountable in some form or fashion.
Yeah. You know, I've found from my experience, and Linda, you can tell me if you find this as well, that a lot of times, you know, I just have to blame the caregiver, because for whatever reason, and I can't even imagine what the reason is, because it depends on your personality and your temperament and this and that. But there are caregivers out there, you know, who maybe have a very timid personality. They don't want to ask. In fact, if you can believe it, there are family members who actually call them up and say, hey, if you need anything from me, you know, just let me know. And all they say is, okay, I'll let you know. And then that's it. They let them get away. That's like the fish is on the hook and you just threw them back in the lake. You're right. You got to be specific. Don't say, yeah, I'll call you. Just, well, how about next Tuesday? Like you said, you know, I could use a break and dad has a doctor appointment. Can you do that? And if they say no, then have a backup plan. Okay, well, how about picking up two or three things from us at the supermarket? That would save me a trip, you know, and just keep going down the line to where you come to the most ridiculous, simple requests that they would be embarrassed to say no about. And then maybe next time you get them to move up to the next level, so to speak. Linda, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I've heard that thing. You guys can just call me if you need anything. And it's like they know that you're not going to call.
Yeah.
It's like that little thing. I'm saying this to be nice, but I really don't mean it. Right? but yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. You know, you run to Walmart or somewhere and pick up a prescription or, you know, that's, you know, give me something to do.
Yeah. Don't let them embarrass
my son,
you.
My son, too. Yeah.
Don't let them intimidate you.
Yeah. My son's like, tell me what you want me to do. You know, I want to help you, but you've got to tell me exactly what you want me to do.
Yeah.
I knew a caregiver years ago who had a box of index cards, and on every index card there was a different task written on the card.
That's
and
good.
When someone would say to that caregiver, you know, just let me know what I could do to help, she would whip out this box of index cards and open the box up and say, pick a card. And that, you know, so she was prepared with
awesome.
The task for people to step up.
Yeah, because, you know, I have a bad memory. When they put me on the spot like that, it's like, now, wait a minute. I knew there was 10 things yesterday. I'll call you back. That's a great idea, Barry.
That
awesome.
Is a good idea.
See, his book is full of great ideas like that.
I know. I've got to get that book.
So,
and I've got to get index cards.
Yeah. Do you find that caregivers have a problem with doctors and nurses and administrators? They seem to not respect the caregiver, even the patient sometimes, because they want to know. I mean, for me, I'll give you a personal example with my wife and her stroke. You know, I want to know, well, what's going on. Why are you doing this? Why aren't you, giving her a CAT scan and this and that? And, you know, these are normal questions for an anxious husband whose wife just had a stroke. Yet some doctors will just look down upon you and speak, you know, to you like you're inconveniencing them and so on. You know, that's a bad doctor. But others will be very courteous and sit down and say, well, let me tell you what's really going on here. And da 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 da. And so I'm sure you get both types when you're in a group of people.
Absolutely. I mean, so there are certainly doctors that are more family friendly than others. I think a lot of those doctors have had family caregiving experiences themselves, because in my experience talking with doctors about this, the ones that have cared for an aging parent or a disabled spouse, they get it, and then it sensitizes them to these issues, and then they bring that to their clinical work as well. I would also say primary care docs are better at this than specialists.
Yeah.
Specialists are often very technically oriented, and they're very focused on the patient's problems as a technical problem, and they will give lip service to family support, but they don't have much feel or much time for family caregivers' needs.
Yeah, and I've found that as well. It's like many of them don't even like people. You know, I think of Dr. House on television, right? He's a classic example. Great doctor. If I had a mystery disease, I would want him working on it. But man, some of these doctors. So what do you do if you have one of those Dr. Houses and you can't seem to get answers? What do you recommend? I mean, do we go above their head? Do we go to the administrator? What can a caregiver do when they feel like they're not being treated properly?
Caregivers can certainly go around and go ask for a different doctor on the case. I mean, that's always an option because our loved one's care is of utmost concern. If we don't feel that our loved one is getting the right care, or if the doctor isn't communicating properly, then we have the right to get a better doctor in. I would say in general, having been in medical education for 20 plus years, that medicine is placing much greater emphasis in training doctors to be good communicators because they understand how important it is for everybody's ultimate wellness. And so doctors have gotten the message that they need to be better communicators. They go through all kinds of training programs during medical school to be better communicators. And so they have to practice it. They got to walk the walk.
Yeah, that's good because they certainly aren't shy about sending us the bill. You know, you know, so they shouldn't be concerned that I'm going to piss the doctor off if I go over his head. And, you know, he may even give me worse service because there are enough doctors in a hospital that they can bring in another neurologist or another, you know, cardiac doctor, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I think administrators are very sensitive to this as well. I mean, administrators understand that it's not just the patient who has to leave satisfied, but the family has to leave satisfied. The hospital reputation depends upon it, and so we're in an age of kind of consumer culture, even in medicine, and we are the customers; they need to serve us.
Yeah. Now, this may seem like a stupid question, but why won't caregivers just take care of themselves and put their loved ones' needs above their own? Why are, in my opinion, 98% of caregivers either in burnout or right on the verge of burnout? I mean, that's the impression I get from my listeners, anyway.
I mean, it's a real hard question, David. I mean, I've struggled with this in my own career to try to understand this. And I would say to you that there are a lot of caregivers who feel that it's incumbent upon them to care for their loved one, and that if they even accept help that's offered them, that somehow it means that they're shirking their duties,
yeah,
and that they're going to prove that they're not a good wife or they're not a good daughter, and they don't want other people to judge them in that regard, and they don't want to judge themselves in that regard. But you know what I always talk about with caregivers is caregiving is a marathon and not a sprint. nobody runs a marathon without taking in replenishment along the way, without pacing yourself, without running alongside other people in order to kind of give you greater strength. When people try to attempt this without accepting help, then they're never going to get from the start to the finish. And, you know, it's a metaphor that I use daily with the people who come to see me because it's one way for me to communicate to them just how important self-care is if you want to fulfill the mission that you've set before you. You know, people don't go into caregiving saying, I'll do this for a little while and then I'll burn out, you know, and then I'll be done with it. You know, they go into it saying, I want to help my loved one for as long as my loved one needs help. And that is often an extended period of time. And that means that if they want to do a good job at that, then self-care is a necessity, just like self-care running a marathon is a necessity.
Yeah. And, you know, caregivers may think they have it bad. Like I thought I had it bad until I started hearing some other stories. And I said, oh, my gosh, I am one lucky son of a gun because I'm hearing stories about people who really have it bad. And then they go and hear stories about people, you know, who have it even worse than them. And it's like, you know, they're all trying to top each other on my website. Say, oh, yeah, well, listen to this. Linda, what are your thoughts on that?
I've seen that over and over. As a matter of fact,
Because you've got a hard situation. I mean, we both do. And I don't know who's got it harder, but I think we're both glad that we're not each other.
I know. And to me, it's like, I want to say, look, people, it's not a competition. Okay. You know, we're all doing the best that we can do, you know, and we, like our family, you know, we're living through things that I never dreamed in a million years that, you know, that we would have to go through. But, you know, you just keep going. You just keep, you know, you get up every morning, you do the same thing, and you go to bed at night, and then you're up and down all night. But I don't know about you, but God gives me the strength to keep going every single day and every single night.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know,
yeah,
shows like this, I'm sorry, I was just going to say shows like this, you know, puts the tools in their hands, but sometimes they don't even watch the show. So I don't have time for that.
Yeah, that's true. They don't have the time to sit down and watch, but, you know, you can turn a radio on and listen as you work. But yeah.
Well, that's the old saying. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink it. You know.
You can't make him drink. That's right.
We just keep trying. So, Barry, I assume you see this also, right?
Yes, I do. And I mean, sometimes the people who come into my office as a psychologist are brought under like duress, and they're under protest. You know, they don't want to be there, but they've been arm twisted into coming to my office by other family members or by doctors. And so then I have to figure out how to engage them and actually make them see that this is worthwhile. And so in essence, I have to really appeal to them by saying to them that what you put into the tank is what keeps you going. And that, you know, all of us are human. You know, eventually we run out of energy if not for replenishment. And so how do we convince people to do this on a regular basis? I'm hoping that caregivers are getting that message, though I certainly agree with you that there are lots of folks who are still self-neglectful. I also understand how caregivers can't sit down and read a book very readily or watch a TV show very readily because they've got
guilty.
So many things to do. Exactly, because you know people feel like why should I be allowed to care for myself when my loved one is suffering? And it's almost like they have to suffer along with their loved one. But that, I mean, honest to God, the caregiver's suffering doesn't do a whit of good for the care recipient.
I call that the martyrdom syndrome, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So it sounds like you agree with it too, Linda.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's, oh, woe is me. But now I can't say anything because there are times, especially in the evening when I'm so tired, but then the nighttime chores start. And my son can vouch, he has heard me whine several times. I'm so tired. But, you know, as you know, well, both of y'all know, it doesn't matter how tired you are, you've got to do what you've got to do. And just, but now I want to put this in there. This past week, after 10 years, we finally have in-home nursing care. So I am,
How'd that happen?
Through an absolute miracle. I have tried before and I've always got denied. And so, and expecting the same thing, but praying, you know, that God would, you know, just take full control. And not only were we okayed for nursing care, it's 49 hours a week in-home nursing care.
That's like overtime.
And they're now, I know. And then they're now supplying all the diapers and pads and gloves that we have been buying for 10 years now. So we are.
Wow.
We're trying to get used to it. It's like, you know, are we in a dream or what?
Yeah. But, you know, that is a miracle.
Amazing.
That brings up a good thing. Barry, do you notice that caregivers who have some kind of faith in God or higher power seem to make it better or more than others who maybe are atheists, who have a very pessimistic view of life, and you know, we're born, we live, and we die, and that's it, over.
The answer is yes. So there's a lot of psychological research that shows that people who have faith, as well as people who are part of a religious community, have less depression and anxiety than folks who don't. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Just to kind of distinguish between the two, I think when people have a sense of faith, they have strong assurance that they're on the right path, that their needs are being attended to in some way, and also a feeling of real conviction that what they're doing is the right thing. So that I think is part of what helps caregivers who have faith. But I also think that being part of a religious or spiritual community, standing shoulder to shoulder with people, maybe attending regular services, allows people to feel more support. They just benefit tremendously from having a group of people around them who care about them and ask about them and look after them. And that both those things together are become essential elements for sustaining oneself, through the course of caregiving.
Yeah. One is called a support group, and the other
Correct.
Is called hope. And, you know, the Bible says if you don't have hope, man, you're a goner. The people perish.
I think hope is one aspect of it, but the other is just a deep sense that this is the right thing to do, that as hard as it is, as miserable as it could be at times, that this is something that you're doing because it just shows your character in every action that you're taking to help the person you love.
Well, listen, this is a good time to take another break, so we will be right back.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve, and a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps, ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Dr. Barry Jacobs and Linda Bice, my co-host today. And when we left, we were talking about faith and hope and how important it is that somehow, you know, caregivers who have that kind of faith or have a church or a synagogue they go to seem to fare better than those who don't. Is there any hope for those who don't have a faith, atheists, those who have a pessimistic attitude in life? Can they make it, or do they have to change their attitude?
I mean, I think pessimists are at a disadvantage for sure. I mean, optimists have it all over them. I'm a pessimist by nature. I mean, I think all of us have we're born either pessimistic or optimistic. So I've had to work very hard to overcome my natural pessimism. But I think, as you said, optimists come by hope, and that hope, you know, really helps carry them forward oftentimes. There are folks who don't have a strong religious belief, but have strong moral principles. Mm-hmm. They believe that, we do unto others as they would have them do unto us. And that
karma.
Karma, and they believe that doing good matters. and it will result in a better world and maybe good outcomes for themselves. And that also helps sustain caregivers. Just that those kind of moral principles that they can keep their hands on every day and not lose sight of as they go about the business of caring for somebody.
Yeah, there's a chapter in one of your books, Weighing Hope and Acceptance, Fantasy and Reality. Can you explain that?
Sure. This is in my first book, The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers, as one of the seven tasks that I think all caregivers need to undertake in order to do as well as possible. So, you know, when we're dealing with a loved one's medical condition, we want to be realistic about that condition. We have to try to strike a balance. If we are too negative about that, we know that they're going to go downhill and we have no sense of hope about their having any quality of life, then that kind of takes the wind out of our sails. At the other end of the spectrum, if we deny that they even have that condition or that they're going to get worse or that we somehow have the belief that if we're a good enough caregiver, we can cure their condition, then that is a kind of fantasy that is also not helpful. And so I think that the idea of being realistic and being able to accept the reality of what's going on is really what caregivers need to do in order to approach their loved one's condition and the circumstances with their best attitude and to be able to use their best efforts. And that means, for instance, if you have a loved one who has dementia, and we know that dementia is going to progress over time, then we really focus on enjoying that person today and hearing stories and having positive interactions with them today, because those stories and those interactions are not guaranteed for tomorrow. And so we want to derive as much as we can today and not dwell on what may come down the pike in the future, or by the same token, we not deny that our loved one has a problem, which I sometimes see. Sometimes caregivers will say that they confuse acceptance with giving up. And that's not true. Acceptance is, you know, facing the adversity before you squarely, and then so that you can really handle it as best as you can. I sometimes see people who basically refuse to accept what's going on because they feel that doing so is being quote unquote negative, and that's not being negative. That's being realistic and setting the best circumstances for doing as well as you can.
Yeah. I want to tell a real-life story of one of the people I know. They were diagnosed with cancer about a year ago, stage 4 cancer, smoker all of his life. And he's the kind of guy with the temperament, like, for example, him and his wife felt like the kids were taking advantage of them because they were always dropping the kids off. And it's like they felt like they didn't have a life. They were babysitting, you know, Monday through Friday, and they were supposed to have their weekends off. And then, you know, the kids are going off on weekends and dropping the kids off. So like they're trapped in this home, like a prison with their grand. Now they love their grandchildren. They love spending time with them, but they needed a break. But he just couldn't come around to tell them that because, you know, he's that kind of a person. So anyway, he gets diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. You know, it's a death sentence. And I don't know about you, but if I was diagnosed with that, I would say, you know, forget the chemo, forget all that pain. I'm just going to live however many days I have in the best quality that I can. And he agreed. That's what he wanted too, he told me. But after talking to his wife and the kids and the grandkids, you know, he couldn't succumb the pressure. So he went and signed up for all the chemo, all the radiation. And I mean, for the last 12 months, he was in hell. And he finally died 2 days ago. And I'm saying to myself, why didn't he listen to me? He could have at least maybe had 6 months of a quality life. Instead, he had 12 months of hell. What do you both of you guys think of that? You first, Barry.
All right. How about ladies first? Linda, why don't you
ladies
go? You
heard
about
okay. The
same.
Well, I'm a firm believer in quality of life. Quality, not quantity. And I agree with you. I would want to spend my last years or my last months doing what I want to do, you know, enjoying my life, being with my family and not suffering and making them suffer too. As a matter of fact, when my family saw, you know, all that we have gone through with David, my mom and dad both signed do not resuscitate forms because they saw what our life was like and said that they did not want that kind of life and they did not want to put us through that. But I mean, it's quality. Yeah, that would quality, not quantity, if it comes down to that. Absolutely.
Amen. Your turn, Barry.
I agree wholeheartedly. I would say to you that you know, more and more in medicine, there's an interest in palliative care, and this idea of providing you know, what tools we have to help people live as well as possible for as long as they can. And that sometimes that does mean using chemo if it's going to extend someone's life but not decrease the quality of their life. Or it may mean even having surgery if it to debulk a tumor, for instance, if that again means that someone's going to be able to, you know, be able to walk better or swallow better, and so that to live a higher quality life. So it's not a question of either no medical intervention or going all out. It's a question of using what choices are available in order to wisely live as well as you can. And enjoy, as Linda says, enjoy one's family and enjoy this world for as long as we can.
Well, we all seem to be in agreement with that. Dr. Jacobs, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. Thank you so much for coming in. And how can you be reached if someone wants to get your book or if they want to schedule you to speak somewhere? Contact information?
Sure. So the two books are The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers and the newer one, AARP Meditations for Caregivers. They're both available on Amazon. And in terms of contacting me, I have a Facebook page. It's Barry J. Jacobs, and PsyD is my degree, a Doctor of Psychology degree. Or you can go to the AARP Meditations for Caregivers Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Or I do have a website, emotionalsurvivalguide.com, emotionalsurvivalguide.com, and there's a way to contact me through that site. So I welcome inquiries, and you know, I oftentimes caregivers just reach out to me and share their stories, and you know, we talk a little bit about what they're going through.
Yeah, well, that's great. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. Linda, how can someone get a hold of you?
Well, we've got our website. It's www.bicefamily.weebly.com. That's bicefamily.weebly.com. And then, of course, email thebicefamily@gmail.com. And, of course, I'm on Facebook, too, at Linda Bice.
And that's B-Y-C-E.
B-Y-C-E, yes. Thank you very much.
Good. And Adrian, if you're listening, I hope that you are okay and they stop the bleeding.
And again,
a reminder that all our live shows become recorded podcasts and videocasts on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, and also on YouTube and Blog Talk and iTunes and so on and so on. All those platform links can be reached on our website. And when you're there, don't forget to take our short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, to assess where you are in the burnout process. And to get your free copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So until next Wednesday, Pacific time, noon, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon, Pacific time, and anytime afterwards on podcast, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.